Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome to a new episode of Sixers Daily. I'm your host, Jazz Kang. A career night for Joel Embiid. Tied his career high, had 50 points, 12 rebounds. Sixers get a win 123-110 over the Orlando Magic. But I do have to say, as much as you can hear that score and you hear about the big night that Joe had, it wasn't that pretty. We'll get into that as well. Joining me for this one, Jackson Frank. Jackson, you write for Liberty Ballers. Tough decision to see who was the bell ringer for this game after after things wrapped up for her. I want to get into this first, though. Let's just get into Joel Embiid's dominance, because he was so good in the first quarter, had 20 points. That was actually his career high for most points in over a 12-minute span in the quarter, 23 in the third quarter. What did you make of his performance, and how awesome has he been over the last month and a half here?
Yeah, it was just a really focused performance, I thought. He showcased everything he can do as a scorer these days. And what I loved most, I thought, offensively was a lot of times, maybe starting in the third quarter mostly, but he was working hard to get deep position on the block. He was hustling in early offense to get those deep catches, making sure that his teammates saw he was available down there. And I didn't think that, he's been playing well for a while, but I don't think that's always the way he plays, which is fine because he has other ways to score. But he realized he had a pretty big mismatch against, whether it was Mo Bamba or Robin Lopez, and he really just went to work there. So, that was what was most impressive, is he just made sure that a lot of his touches were going to be within 6 feet of the hoop against a guy who couldn't slow him down. So that's what stood out to me. And then, you saw the pull-up jumpers. You saw him get 17 free throws. You saw him hit a step-back three. So it was just, it was a good matchup for him, and he took about as full advantage as you can, in this game.
Yeah, you're looking at Joel's numbers since December the 16th, 33.1 points, which is the highest in the NBA over that span, just ahead of LeBron James, putting up 10.1 rebounds, MVP level stuff that we've seen from him. And especially in this game, like I was saying at the beginning and during the intro, the Magic were actually up by 9 going into halftime. And let's be frank, the Orlando Magic stink. And then I don't think I'm saying anything too rude there. Although they do have some nice pieces with, as you mentioned, Mo Bamba, who had, I believe, 28 points in the first half, which is beat his career high. Franz Wagner, also a good player. But looking at this, the way that the Sixers came out in the third quarter, almost put up 50 points on the Magic, outscored them 47-23. But when you're looking at the difference between, obviously Joel was the reason why the Sixers were so dominant in that third quarter. But Jackson, when you're looking at how the Sixers played in that third quarter versus especially that second quarter, what do you think outside of Embiid that they were doing well as a five-man unit that enabled them to kind of dominate that 12-minute stretch there?
Yeah, so I think in that first half, they were really not sharp with their switches. Seth Curry messed them up. Tobias was a pretty big culprit off the ball. And they weren't very good about, they didn't exactly know how to defend the Mo Bamba pick and pop. I thought, I don't think Bamba's shooting great from three this year. Obviously, he's gotten pretty good volume up. I know he's been kind of up and down at times in terms of the percentage, but you got to feel like maybe after the second one, you're changing your coverage, right? Like, it's okay. Maybe the first or second, you're going to give an average 3-point shooter, let's say, for a big man, average those shots, right? But once the guy's hot, you got to switch things up. So I thought in the second half, they did a better job. Joel was trapping or showing a lot in the pick and rolls. If Bamba was popping rather than rolling, they were having the weak side wing defender stunt to take away Bamba there, because even though he's a big man, he's not someone who's really going to burn you in the post on mismatches. He's gotten better at that this year, but it's still not his game. He wants to be a floor spacer and things like that. Maybe take a one dribble pull up. So thought they were better, more aggressive pick and roll coverage, not letting those passes be so easily from the ball handler to Mo Bamba on the pick and pop. That was the biggest thing that stood out to me, I think. And then they were just generally better, I think, at denying things off the ball, a little crisper with executing, that switch heavy defense they'll run a lot of the time. So started with Joel, but a lot of it was just low-hanging fruit for improvement, figuring out how to not let Mobamba get wide open threes on pick and pops. And should have happened a lot earlier, but, you know, fortunately for the Sixers, they figured it out and Joel continued to dominate after halftime. And they had, as you mentioned, a huge third quarter in which, you know, Joel had 23 and the Magic had 23 on their own. And I was, my favorite stat from this game, I think, is that I did the math and I could be off. I tried to do it pretty carefully, but when Joel was on the floor, the Magic scored 52 points and Joel has on his own scored 50, which doesn't even include any of the assists he had. So on his own, he was responsible for about as many points as the Magic were when he was out there. When you factor in assists, I think he had two assists. So I think he had 54 total points created. So they could have just played Joel and they would have won that game.
Well, I mean, dude, the way he was manhandling Robin Lopez down low, like you were mentioning earlier, Jackson, the way he would get the seals like right in front of the rim. And I there was a couple times I'm like, give him the ball. You know what? Like I'm yelling because obviously the Sixers perimeter guys are bringing the ball up, but you're looking at how he's been able to score these points. And you mentioned, you know, the pull-ups, he had that, the crazy three there, I believe as the shot clock was running down. He's doing it in so many different ways. And when you look at Joel Embiid's numbers, as I mentioned, the highest, basically the highest, the leading scorer in the NBA over the last month or so, putting up 30 a game consistently now. And you look at just how good he's been. Sixers players with multiple 50-point, 10-rebound games. I retweeted this from StatMuse. Wilt Chamberlain, Joel Embiid. That's it. You know what I mean? That's the list right there. So you're looking at how good he has been. When you look at earlier in his career and you look at how he's evolved and the player he's become now, where do you think the two or three biggest aspects he's grown his game since he kind of entered the league and where he's at right now?
Yeah, so I will get into this, but I shameless plug, I wrote a big thing over at Basketball News this week about Joel's awesome season and his growth. So I can only say so much on this podcast, but people want the most in-depth thing you can offer. I've been watching and covering Joel for basically his entire career, so I have good insight there. But I think I have good insight, at least. Hopefully people agree when they read it. But
that's all that counts, Jackson. Right? Yeah, as long as you do, we're okay.
But the biggest thing that I wrote about in this piece, just like the overarching theme, I think, is how composed and patient he is offensively these days. There's just nothing that speeds him up. Early in his career, there were teams and opponents and coverages that could give him trouble, especially like if you would send late help for about Joel's first 3 or 4 years, the Celtics were great at this with Marcus Smart, especially. If you would send late help, not from the baseline, and when he would kind of get to a spin or try to get that post hook, he would get rattled. Now he'll see the help coming from wherever it is. Just take a dribble back, keep his dribble alive. That's another really key piece, is he doesn't like he would really kind of succumb against doubles where he would just kind of turn into like a 6'5" player. And obviously he's 7 feet tall. Now he keeps dribble alive, or he'll get to that step through with the fadeaway that he loves, especially in the middle, or just fade baseline again before the double can come. So just so composed. If someone takes away his first option, which is a lot harder these days, he'll just transition to a second option that he's comfortable with, which kind of goes into him expanding his off dribble game a ton. I think about 25% of his shots are coming off the dribble in the half court this year, according to Synergy, which is a career high after last year's career high of 19%. Previously, it was 13% 1 year, and he was a lot less effective in terms of how often he's putting the ball in the basket on those shots. So that's the biggest thing. It's just a lot more patient, scans the floor a lot better. Just nothing you can really do these days to speed him up, whether it's a scorer or as a passer. Still has times where he's not the best passer in the league, you know, for big men or anything, but like, you look at the way he finds cutters way more often this year. That's a huge improvement too. We saw that, you know, one of those, a couple of them tonight, I guess, with Tobias and Furkan, I think, on his two assists. So the biggest thing is just patience and composure. And, you know, the decision-making, I think, is really, really, you know, kind of improved. I think it was always okay because he was a great scorer or a very good scorer, and you'll live with that. But now it just feels like he's always making shrewd decisions. And I don't think that was always the case with him before.
Yeah, he's been on a crazy run, and you mentioned that too. The way he's able to stay patient when he's catching the ball, and even as the double teams come in, he's been getting a lot better at facing up towards the hoop, seeing the double team come, and even if it's not, you know, a direct pass for an assist, it's almost like a hockey assist where he's given, you know, one pass and the second one is finding an open shooter. Unfortunately, if it's somebody like Tobias Harris, not going to go in majority of the time, as we've seen. But I think he's, you know, I agree with you. I think his patience and where he's at right now offensively, I mean, the most dialed in player really in the offensive end in the NBA, I feel like, over the last little stretch here. And since Christmas, the Sixers now sitting at 10-2 since then. improved to 26-18. We did get some news about, well, rumors and reports, Jackson, about your favorite subject, which is Ben Simmons.
I know. At least it's actual news, right? At least it's not the non-update we got last week. I will talk about, you know, speculative trade partners, but the last week was just hilarious because it wasn't anything, right? It was just,
yeah. Are they going to move? Are they open to? Yeah. Like who knows? Yeah. And I think we're all kind of tired, but we did get some movement. Keith Pompey, one of the most plugged in Sixers guys around, if not the most. And obviously we had Shams weighing in on that. I want to touch on the potential rumors that we're hearing about Sacramento, but also kind of looking at what this means for the Sixers in the bigger picture, not only in the long run, but in the short run as well. We'll do that after a short break.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, and we're back talking to Jackson Frank, as I usually do on post-game shows whenever we're in the hot seat. Jackson, we talked a lot about Joel Embiid, his dominant 50-point performance, tied a career high. Really should have hit that free throw to make it 51, but as soon as he missed
he was like, kicking himself, I think, on the sidelines. I think he was talking with someone when he subbed out, and he was a little he was just upset with himself because Joel always hates when he misses free throws. So, yeah, he was so close. But that's 50 is a nice round number, even if it's still, you know, not a new career high.
Oh, this was a team to do it against too, because like I said, Orlando sucks. So I mean, it was. It's been great to see him kind of growing into the player that he's become. The definite MVP candidate at this point. That remains to be seen how serious the voters take him. Of course, we're a while away from that yet. But focusing on something that's coming up in the short run, which is the NBA trade deadline, set for February the 10th. Obviously, Ben Simmons still remains a part of the Sixers organization in whatever way that he is. But we did have a report coming out from Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I'm just going to kind of quote here what he's saying. Basically said, multiple sources said the Western Conference team that was willing to complete a deal for Simmons and Tobias Harris is the Sacramento Kings. Mentioned that Sacramento considering a package that includes Buddy Hield, Tyrese Halliburton, Harrison Barnes, two first-round picks, hoping to get in exchange for that Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle. When you saw this come, and I think Pompey, like I said, is great at his job, and I know he's so plugged in with the organization. Haven't heard, you know, totally if that was the final package, but again, this is coming from Keith. But when you're looking at this, Jackson, what are your thoughts on that potential package? And, you know, we read some other news that Matisse Thybulle might be untouchable. I don't think that he is as great as a defender as he is. But to me, when I'm looking at that, I love what Tyrese Halliburton brings, not only as a shooter, but as a playmaker. Buddy Hield, not the greatest defender in the world, but high volume shooter who shoots above 40% at 9-10 attempts per game. Harrison Barnes still on a declining contract, a nice piece who could play a small ball four. And those two first round picks coming from the Kings, who are the crappiest organization in the NBA, could potentially be worth a gold mine in the future. But Jackson, when you're looking at that deal, what are your thoughts on that being a package in return for Ben? It might be underwhelming in the sense of getting an all-star, but you're also shedding Tobias Harris's deal on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a deal that if it was available, and there's been so many different reports, you know, Keith had one, Sam Emex had some stuff as of late, you know, Shams are the one you mentioned, Jason Anderson of the SAC B had something earlier this morning that mentioned, you know, that the Kings are willing to part with De'Aaron Fox. So it's tough to know what exactly is, you know, a leverage play and what's actually the truth. But if that's a deal that is actually available, that's when I would absolutely, you know, say the Sixers should accept. As you mentioned, it's not just the fact that like they get three guys they can, you know, immediately put in the rotation, as well as two first round picks for a team that might still be drafting in the top 10, top 12. You know, even if they get Ben Simmons, And I think they probably would still because they're moving three of their better players. Nobody Hield has his issues, but there's still guys who kind of helped them and, you know, at times kind of be a team that's in the play-in conversation. That's a deal that I think they should absolutely take, you know, because you get good stuff for Ben Simmons. You get off of a guy like Tobias Harris, who not only has struggled a lot this year, but as a guy that, you know, really does, you know, and it's not his fault. Like you take the money you get given. But the decision to, you know, give him that 5-year $180 million contract has really kind of hamstring them financially, unfortunately. And, you know, aside from last regular season and first round, he hasn't, you know, isn't a guy who has produced at the level, you know, I wouldn't even say he was like close to the level of guys who make similar money. But at least last year he was kind of on the all-star fringes, and you can kind of at least see how good he could be. But, you know, first year of that deal, he wasn't anywhere close to it. This year he hasn't been. I know we've talked about he's been dealing with injuries and whatnot, but that would be a huge win for them if, you know, if they're able to move off of Tobias and, you know, get guys who fit better and are good players on top of the two first round picks that you mentioned.
Do you think that, you know, when you're lining, and like you mentioned, I mean, Sam Amick and Shams basically saying, hey, what we're hearing from our sources with the Kings is De'Aaron Fox not going anywhere. They'd like to still build around Fox and Tyrese Halliburton. So again, who knows what these people are hearing and what the truth is. I reckon to say it's somewhere in the middle. But, you know, going back to what I wanted to say, when you're looking at the short run and the long run for this team, because from my perspective, looking around the NBA, like you look in the East, you know, the Bucks, the Sixers who are taking up the 5 and 6 spot as the time we're recording this podcast, they're within 2.5 games of the top spot in the conference. You know, Chicago looks like it's going to hang on to beat Cleveland. So that'll put the Bulls up into a tie with Miami there. The Brooklyn Nets are right there. As I mentioned, Cavs now will fall back likely to being 2.5 back of those three teams. But you're looking at this, like, do you think that Morey should kind of say, hey, if I can't maybe get an all-star, and regurgitating the names we've heard the entire time, which are Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal. So, you know, like those are the guys he wants to maybe target. But obviously we've heard James Harden now that maybe a sign in trade in the summer, since he didn't, you know, opt in to sign that deal with the Nets. But when I'm looking at the landscape of the NBA, and we were talking a bit before we started rolling here, like you got Phoenix, Golden State, Memphis, maybe Utah to a lesser degree in the West. And then out East, it almost seems like it's wide open, you know, and who knows, you know, what's been going on with the Bucks, with them, you know, playing with Giannis and Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday. I'm sure Brooklyn, if they get everybody back on in terms of their big three with KD, Harden and Kyrie, and depending on the vaccination stuff, that's, again, I think a couple of months down the line as we get into the playoffs. But you're looking at this, like, I feel like this, if in the NBA, Jackson, if you have a chance to win it now, go for it. Like we saw the Raptors do that, right? In 2019, they totally bet on Kawhi, thinking, hey, we're going to take a shot at winning him. They traded one of the most beloved players in franchise history in DeMar DeRozan, bought in Kawhi with no assurances that he would stay past 1 year, but they won a championship, right? Which is the Raptors, as good as they were at points in the regular season, going out through the last previous decade, never really got things done. And so I'm looking at this, like, if you can get a package like that at Halliburton, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, where it'll give you a ton of options in terms of your lineup rotation. Do you think Morey has to look at that, just considering the level that Joel Embiid's playing at, and given Joel's injury history, and considering the fact he's a 7-footer, like, we know those guys don't age too well. So when you're looking at that from that perspective, do you think it's worth the Sixers just being like, let's just take what we can get, maximize our chances right now, and go try and win a friggin' championship this season?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, And this is not, you weren't implying otherwise, but the difference between, you know, when the Raptors went forward is there was a chance Kawhi, you know, left, and obviously he did, but the Sixers get for Ben Simmons don't just leave after mm-hmm. this year, right? Like, mm-hmm. like if things don't go great this year, like, I'm not like, this could very well be the best year of Joel's career. You know, he's right around his prime. I think he turns 28 in a month and a half or so. You know, this year, next year, and the previous year probably his three best. Like, yeah, that matters, but like, you're like, the players you get don't all of a sudden just become free agents, right? So you can try again next year. But yeah, they're on 57 win pace. They're 23-10 with Joel. I know that like teams are generally really good when their MVP plays, but also teams aren't usually playing the entire year without their second best player. There's some teams like the Nuggets that have been without guys, but regardless, like 57 win pace, and you haven't just played like cupcakes the entire way. Like, yeah, you've had a few games against the Magic and whatnot, but you've beaten some playoff, you've beaten the Raptors, and well, I guess they beat the Raptors, and the Raptors were in health and safety, but you've beaten the Hornets, you know, you lost, my goodness, I let's backtrack. You've beaten the Bulls, you've beaten the Nets, you've beaten the Warriors, you've beaten good teams when Joel's been healthy, right? You've beaten the Heat. Mm-hmm. I know the Heat weren't full strength, but this team is really good. And Joel makes everyone really, really like makes things easy for everyone. And so you improve your guard depth, you get a little more shooting, you get a better fitting power forward, in Harrison Barnes. Who's to say this team isn't 63 win caliber pace? And I know that, the schedule picks up, I think, in February and March, but I think this team, has a chance. I wouldn't pick them as maybe one of my top three to go out of the East, even with maybe the Packers that we mentioned, but I wouldn't like totally scoff at it. I'd have to see I'd have to conceptualize further about how those players fit, but I think you got to go for it. As you mentioned, there's a lot of uncertainty this year. The Bucks might be without Brook Lopez. I think the Bucks can still be really good, but that guy is pretty key to them defensively. The Cavs are really good, but you don't know, do they have enough depth? Do they have enough guard play? The Nets, that whole Kyrie situation, what's Harden going to look like? What's KD going to look like when he comes back? The Bulls, are a team that's dealing with some injuries now too, and they're going to be in their first year of kind of an actual playoff run with this core. I think the Heat are obviously very good. They've got playoff proven guys leading the way and a great coach, but I think you got to go for it. I think it's just too wide open, as you mentioned. And I think this team is kind of, the way Joel's playing, he's, I don't know. I wouldn't bet on it. I don't know if I'd bet on it, but he's not incapable of kind of backpacking this team, a team that's mostly role players and high level starters to a deep run. Maybe that doesn't result in a championship. Winning a championship is really, really, really hard. But I think it could result in a deeper run and a much closer chance at the title than they've ever had, maybe besides that year they had Jimmy Butler and Joel and whatnot. So kind of a long-winded rant, but to answer it briefly, yes, I think they got to go for it because of how well Joel is playing and how well the team has played when Joel's out there this year, despite Ben Simmons not playing.
Yeah, Jackson, and I think that's where, we do agree on that too. Because like I mentioned, you mentioned the Chicago Bulls. It's like, yeah, they got a nice piece of, he's playing at MVP level too, in DeMar DeRozan. Zach LaVine, obviously a very good player, and they got some nice complimentary guys around them, Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso. You can go down the line. But again, I'm just looking at it from that, you remember the years where it was, okay, Golden State's going to, it's going to be Golden State, Cleveland. You know what I mean? From 2015 till 2019, I mean, that was kind of, or 2018, at least that was the thinking. And looking around at the NBA, it's like, okay, right now, I think the Western Conference teams are a little bit better in terms of the ones that are at the top of the pack with the Suns, the Dubs, and the Grizzlies. And then looking at the East, like you mentioned, I mean, if Joel's doing what he's doing, they got Tyrese Maxey continuing to improve. I think Seth Curry's a very, very good complimentary piece, although he has been a bit up and down over the past, few weeks or so. Looking at that team, it's like, man, they can kind of do some damage in the playoffs. And it's not like last season where almost, I think it was even with Ben, even the Sixers finishing as a top seed, it was kind of like, it's going to be a daunting task to get through Milwaukee or Brooklyn. And now you're looking at it, you're like, even though, the Bucks are virtually the same team, Brooklyn did make some changes on the outside and the fringe of the roster, bought in a nice piece in Patty Mills and that. But, looking at that squad, I'm like, just given the way they play, Durant obviously out with the injury now, you're like, all right, they look pretty beatable too. So, it's interesting because, and I want to get your thoughts on this too, Jackson, is looking at the James Harden thing. And, obviously Daryl Morey and him have that connection from Houston. Harden won an MVP. They were very, very close to knocking off that stacked Warrior squad, played them really tough in a couple of series. But looking at it now, do you think if that's going to be the end result, it's almost worth not going all in this season and waiting until the offseason to hopefully acquire a Harden, a Lillard, or a Beal?
I just can't get there because you don't get seasons like this from players very often. I mean, it's unfortunate that KD got injured, but we're getting really close to a point where Joel is unquestionably going to be a top three MVP candidate again. Mm-hmm. Obviously, maybe Steph Curry gets hot again and, LeBron, helps kind of Lakers turn things around. But right now, I think, Joel will probably be fourth, my rough voting, he's going to leapfrog KD at some point, I think, because KD's unfortunately injured. You don't get these seasons from guys like Joel is arguably the best basketball player in the world right now. I don't think anyone will probably pick, many people pick him for that title, but he's playing as well as anyone. And you can't just let that go to waste. And as I say, it would go to waste by, necessarily waiting for, perimeter creator, but I don't think you need that. I think we've talked about on previous podcasts, before the year, I thought, yeah, you probably need a little more talent, but I think the way Joel is playing on both ends, he makes things so easy for everyone else that if you just upgrade the rotation with guys like Halliburton and Barnes and Hield, let's say in place of a Tobias, a Furkan, and a Shake, like, you're in a pretty dang good spot, because right now you're already at 50, you're already, you know, already 57 win pace when Joel suits up for you. Like, you add those guys, like, you're probably looking at a 60-ish win, you know, team. And I know the regular season has kind of become increasingly less, you know, indicative at times of, you know, postseason quality, but like, you're a 61 team, you're probably in a pretty good spot when it comes to the postseason, especially when you have a guy like Joel. So I just don't think it makes sense to sit on your hands and say that, oh yeah, like, well, Joel will be this good next year, because yeah, there's a chance he's really, really good again, but you know, the chance that he's this good, you know, is by no means a given. And that's not to say that he couldn't be, but it just, you know, he's not 24 or 25, right? Like, I think you just have to go for it now. And I think this team, you know, could be good enough. I don't think they are right now, because again, they are missing their second best player, who, you know, is earning a lot of money. Well, he has paid a lot of money that is not necessarily going to him. And so that makes it hard to maximize things, but I just think they got to go for it. You know, I think Joel's reached a point offensively where he makes everything easy. And so I think, you know, maybe in previous years, and even last year to an extent, he was a guy who was, you know, was a very good scorer. Last year was a great scorer. And last year, obviously, he took a leap as a passer, but he didn't have the same level of control over the game, I feel like, that he does this year. And I think that makes things so easy. So you plug in these guys you mentioned, you got a chance. Yeah, maybe it doesn't work out because you just don't have the talent, you know, the high-end talent around you well. But I think you got to go for it. I really do.
Jackson, we'll wrap up on this. You know, looking at, we talk about Ben Simmons, it feels like every single time we discuss anything related to the Sixers on the podcast. So let's eliminate him from the equation for this question. Looking at the Sixers as constructed, let's just say Daryl Morey, who has openly said, and we've heard from plugged-in insiders, that the Sixers are willing to wait until the offseason. So let's just say that is the case. February 11th comes, Ben Simmons is still on the roster. Obviously not going to be playing, but he's still on the roster. If you're looking at what the Sixers can do in order to try and improve the team, what kind of player do you think that Morey should be looking for? Let's just say he gives up, you know, a first round pick or a conditional, you know, pick that'll turn into 2 seconds somewhere down the line in order to acquire a proven NBA veteran, maybe not an all-star level or star level player, but just somebody who can contribute. What are some of the attributes you're looking at for the Sixers that they really need, just given as constructed, in order to maybe bump up their chances as they get into the playoffs?
Yeah, so I think the two positions, you know, roughly, and I'll get in the skill sets, you know, a little more specifically later, but the two positions I'd be looking at would be, you know, a bench ball handler or a wing. That guy could be a starter. You just, you know, I think Danny's been up and down, but still okay on the year, but his health seems so fickle, unfortunately, with all these different, you know, I think right now he has hip injuries, all these soft tissue injuries, and we know how good Matisse is, you know, defensively, but a lot of smart defensive teams will just not guard him and make things tough for Embiid. So an upgrade there would be good. And then, you know, Shake and Furkan are just so fickle as bench ball. And I think an upgrade there. But what you'd be looking for is, you know, a guy who spaces the floor well, someone who makes quick decisions. I think the Sixers could really benefit from that. This is a really poor passing team. You know, I would say relative to position, Joel is their best passer. And, you know, some of that is a credit to how good Joel has gotten for a big man, but also, I don't think Joel is who you want as your best passer on a team. I'm not saying you're going to get the best, most impactful passer in a, you know, a trade that doesn't, you know, send out Ben Simmons, but just a quick decision maker guy who's a smart off ball player, whether it's relocating around the arc like Danny does, whether it's the cutting we see from guys like Charlie Brown and Matisse Thybul, even Furkan at times from the baseline. So just smart off ball players who can also provide some more perimeter defense and give you more offensively than Matisse does, because I think Matisse has actually been pretty solid at times, you know, offensively over the last 2 or 3 weeks before his injury, but you still just see times where defenses don't guard him at all. I think the Hornets did that a lot, if I recall, and made things tough. And so, you know, it's like, if you can't get the ball to Joel because Matisse's defender is guarding him or fronting him or shading the backside, wherever the help comes from, then the Sixers don't really have another passer to find Matisse when he cuts. So, the cutting that Matisse does and the synergy he's developed with Joel kind of is all for nothing, and that makes it tough. So again, I kind of went off the rails there, apologies, but just wing or bench ball handler and guys who can space the floor and, you know, kind of give you some size defensively and, you know, that fit around Joel and doesn't make things tougher for him, because, you know, his life is already, you know, as the Sixers anchor on both ends, is already pretty complicated and arduous, and he's been great at it, but you don't want to make things any tougher.
Yeah, and Joel, just a post-game quote, he said, oh, I was okay tonight. And it's like, okay, Joel, you can be a little bit more proud than that. But yeah, I think, you know what, if the focus does shift from a Simmons move, we will start to hear about the Sixers maybe looking at trying to upgrade, like you mentioned, the ball handler position. And you know, we saw some cries from people saying, hey, let's try and get Maxey out there without Joel Embiid on the floor so he can kind of run the second unit. And also, I mean, the athleticism. And this is one thing as great, and we were gushing over Joel in the first half of the pod. But, you know, you look at the lack of athleticism, especially on the defensive end at points where the Sixers have been, you know, they've been taken apart by lesser opponents. We've seen that throughout the season. And the Magic were taking it to them in that second quarter where defensively it just looks like they're a step too slow at points and not able to really get back in transition. So I think the Sixers have plenty of options. We have, you know, roughly 3 weeks now left until the trade deadline. So going to be lots to discuss until then. Jackson, we'll be back in the hot seat doing the post-game podcast next Thursday after the Sixers take on the Lakers. I want to thank you for joining me as always, my man.
Yeah, happy to talk, and you know, should be a fun one to talk after the game. Lakers are certainly a team not short on talking points, so neither are the Sixers, so hopefully it should be a fun one to recap.
All right, that does it for this episode. That's Jackson Frank. You can check him out on Twitter as well. He's at @JackFrank_JJF. You can check me out at JazzKang21. That's JASKANG21. And don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it. We are there. And check us out online. Jackson, Paul Hudrick, Steve, Harrison Grimm. We got a ton of talented writers there who have you covered for all things Sixers at LibertyBallers.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.